You can go ahead and get started. Is that my mic on?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, can you hear me? Great. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome again to TechEd 2014. Hope you're all enjoying the sessions today. My name is Vijay Kumar. I'm a senior product manager for Office 365. I work on privacy, security, compliance, and these topics in Office 365. I'm honored to be joined by our engineering program manager here, Jeff McDowell.
Yeah, my name is Jeff McDowell. I work on the security intrusion detection and response team for SharePoint Online.
Okay, before I get started on the session, I just have a quick question, quick show of hands. How many of you are chief security officers, compliance officer roles in your organization? Great. And the rest of you, I assume, are in IT, and you do talk to your security and compliance officers in your organization. Am I correct? I mean, quick show of hands again. Great, that's good. We want to speak to you both. We want to arm you how to talk to your security and compliance officers, as well as if you're security and compliance officers, we want to talk to you and tell you what, you know, how we think about security, privacy, and compliance in Office 365. Again, we call it, put all of this under the umbrella of trust. We think for customers to trust and have some sense of confidence in the cloud services to put your data up there and use cloud services. You need to be convinced that we do take care of the security, compliance, privacy, reliability, and these aspects. And that's why we put it under trust. And today is a special day. We, especially for these topics in Office 365, we announced a bunch of things at the keynote. We talked about some new encryption feature and other customer control features. And we also announced the Trust Center, the new and revamped Trust Center, Office 365 Trust Center. So I wanted you to have, bookmark this and go read about all of the things that we do in these areas. And we have a bunch of content here, like white papers and videos and things of that sort. We also have dynamic video conversations here with our executives and engineering folks who actually build and run the service to speak to you directly and answer tough questions like is your data safe at rest? Who has access to your data and things of that sort. And every week we'll come back and answer a few questions here on these, in these videos, three to four minute videos. So if you have further questions, you can always submit, and we'll come back and answer them. With that, I'll go ahead and start off. When we think about security, privacy, and compliance, what is the fundamental principle that guides us, right? As Rajesh Jha, our engineering corporate vice president, says in the video in the Trust Center, it is your data. That's the fundamental principle that we have. We believe that it's your data. It's the customer's data. You own it. You control it. We only manage the service for you. We are here to provide the productivity services. And this is what guides us, and this is what makes us think about things like security, privacy, compliance, reliability, and even performance and things of that sort, right? So with that as the fundamental principle that guides us, We'll look at how we think about security. I mean, today's security landscape, you must have seen. I mean, there are news coming out every day, whether it's privacy related with Snowden related stuff, or hackers hacking into either Target or things of that sort. It does concern IT folks. Like, is your data safe? Maybe it's safer if we keep it on prem. Is it safe when we put it in the cloud? I mean, we are here to answer those questions, and we'll hopefully convince you along the way that we do take adequate measures. We do make sure that we keep it safe, secure, and keep your data private, and ensure compliance and things of that sort. Just a little bit about Microsoft experience and credentials in this space in cloud services. We built our first Microsoft data center in 1989, so we're not new to this space, although things have evolved quite a bit since then, right? We've been building enterprise software for decades now, and we've also been in online services for almost a decade now. With, you know, early on we started with BPOS, with exchange hosted services, and you know, in the commercial space. And even before that, we were we had consumer cloud services. So we run over 200 online services today across Microsoft, right? So we're always learning, constantly learning new things, how to make things more efficient, how to make things more secure. You know, what can we learn from our experience from the other online services, right? So with that, let's look at the, you know, with that as a security landscape, let's look at, you know, what do the threats look like? Let's make sense of the threats, right? There are three types of threats, and one is the outsider threats. Obviously, these are bad actors, whether it's bad nation state actors or individuals who want to cause trouble or malicious, right? They want to hack into the service. And then there are insiders who turn, like whether outsiders turn insiders or insiders who turn rogue, those types of attackers. And then finally, the end users. End users themselves are, inadvertently sometimes they tend to share information that is sensitive. How do we think about all of these things, right? We have best practices like prevent breach and assume breach where, we try to anticipate these kinds of threats. And we also have customer controls where we have built-in controls to protect your end users from revealing sensitive content, right? So how do we look at security? So security, like we look at it as, security has two important dimensions. One is built-in service capabilities. These are service level capabilities that we do for all of our customers across Office 365, whether you buy into a particular SKU or not. These are like all the encryption, whether it's encryption at rest in the service, or security best practices like penetration testing, physical security, all of that. We'll go into that in a lot more detail in the future slides here. And then equally important dimension is the customer controls, right? We do what we do to ensure security, but how do we make sure we give you the controls, we give you the tools that you need to tune up or tune down security within your own environment in Office 365. In this, we have unique customer controls like rights management service, data loss prevention services, anti-malware, anti-spam, e-discovery center, various different types of tools that you have within your environment so that you have control over your data in Office 365. Okay, let's get into the service level security capabilities, the one that comes with, Office 365, whether you're a small, medium business or an enterprise business that you buy into Office 365, this is all enabled by default. So we follow what we call a defense in depth approach, where we have a layered security model all the way from physical security up, through logical security and up to your data at the bits and byte level to make sure your data is safe and secure. We have various techniques along the way, but each of those techniques may not be important by themselves, but when we put together, it keeps your data secure. Now I'd like to hand over to Jeff, who will talk in more detail about each of these layers and give you a sense for what we do.
Yeah, so let's go into some of the details about what we actually do here. It starts out at the physical layer. So all of the data in Office 365 lives inside of Microsoft Data Center. And these data centers are geo-distributed around the world in specific regions, depending on what you select at time of sign-up. And these data centers are basically built from the ground up with security in mind, both security in terms of disaster prevention, so like fire prevention and things like seismic bracing on racks, but also security in terms of data protection. So you'll have multiple perimeters of security at one of the Microsoft data center sites. You'll have motion sensors and patrols. You'll have multi-factor authentication. For the actual engineers that work inside these data centers, if anybody wants to actually get at a rack or a server that's hosting any customer's content, they need to go through multi-factor auth. They need to provide a smart card. And we also follow a principle called separation of duties. So that an engineer who actually works on a physical server has no actual access to the application layer, for example, or the actual environment, and vice versa. The folks who work on the application don't have access to the physical site. The next level is the network. So looking at the actual networks where we actually host Office 365 content. So connections between the client and the server, between you and the cloud, are protected by encryption. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But what are we actually doing inside the Office 365 data centers? Well, each of the networks within Office 365 are protected by a secure network boundary. And what I mean by that is a front-end service doesn't just have full ability to openly talk to a back-end service, and a single Office 365 service doesn't have just kind of free rein to talk to another Office 365 service however they want. These things live within secure network boundaries, and they only connect to each other via specific ports and protocols that are very well known and expected and understood. And this is enforced with a combination of application level protections, such as host-based or application firewalls, and also actual network protections like router ACLs. And we're also constantly validating that all this is actually in place. So we do things like scan ourselves from service to service, from outside to in, from inside to out, to make sure that the protections of the ACLs that we think are actually in place are in fact there. When we start talking about the hosts that live on these networks, there's a lot going on. So similar to the networks themselves, how the networks are in kind of these protected, isolated bubbles, the actual machines that we use to run Office 365 are protected by secure domains. So we have a set of domains that don't have trust with any sort of external services that are used to manage and protect our hosts. We apply things like Active Directory group policies to enforce security principles and access control depending on the specific role of that host machine. We also use the service, what we call the orchestration layer or the service fabric. So this is the thing that, this is what we run in our data centers to keep our service kind of healthy and up to date and running, to manage patching. We apply monthly Windows patches, we apply application patches. We keep all of our machines up to date with antivirus software and definitions. And we also make sure that the actual applications that run on those systems are secure. And we do that by way of the security development lifecycle. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this because we have a lot of material on this online. But this is basically the process that we use at Microsoft to ensure that security is considered in every aspect of application design. So when you're designing an application or a feature, you know, that gets reviewed by the appropriate security experts. We build a threat model. We make sure that developers have tools and best practices. We make sure that testers can validate that what we're building and putting out there is actually secure.
That is a really important point. I mean, it's right from the design aspect, you know, the software that we build to run in the service is kept secure through this security development life cycle. For example, Jeff goes through this training every year. I mean, they're refreshed with new material, new things. And in the Trust Center, again, you can go back and look at it. There's detailed articles, and I think there's even a book written about security development life cycle that you can that you can link to and see what it's all about.
So that's all good. We have a lot of protection in place for the hosts and the applications that are running on the hosts. But we also need to talk about, when we're talking about this environment full of machines and software, the people that can log on to that environment and manage it, right? The actual admins. So the first thing I want to say here is, well, we try not to. It's a shared principle across all of Office 365 that we do as few as possible manual touches. We never want to actually have to go in and make a manual touch or manual change to the environment. We certainly never want to actually have to access customer data. And this is something we look at on a month-to-month basis. Whenever an admin has to, you know, go in and fix an issue, we look at that and say, how could we avoid doing that next time? Can we have an automated workflow or a self-healing mechanism that goes and fixes whatever this thing is that we encountered? But sometimes it still happens. You'll hit an issue that you've never seen before in the service, or you know, you'll get a customer request. In the case of SharePoint, we could get a request to restore somebody's data back to a certain point in time, and we need to have kind of a back and forth conversation with the customer because they want it to be done a specific way. So you might have something where you have some level of interaction, and you have to have somebody go in and get access to one of these machines that actually has customer data. So the way that we do this is, Well, so first of all, to even be an administrator in Office 365, you have to go through a series of checks. You have to go through a set of background checks, personnel screening. This could include fingerprinting, depending on the level of access you're asking for and what you're doing. You also have to take yearly training to maintain your admin access, which is a refresher on things like our security lifecycle and processes. But even then, we follow this principle called zero standing access, which means that Office 365 administrators do not just have accounts that are sitting there in Office 365 with high levels of privilege that let them log in whenever they want and do something. When they want access, they have to make a request. And they make a request to this system that we call Lockbox. And the way that works is this. An admin would make a request, and that request comes with a reason. I need to access this environment because I'm working on incident number 12345 to help customer ABC. That's then going to kick off two things. When you make a request for access, first it's going to check that all those things I just said are actually in place. You actually have your background check. You're currently employed by Microsoft. You're in the right business unit. And even then, that request is then going to go out to an individual for approval. And that could be a manager or it could be a security admin, depending on what you're asking for. And if that request gets approved, you're then going to gain temporary access. But the key word there is temporary. That account with those permissions is time-bound, and it's going to go away after a set period of time. And at the end of that time, the admin no longer has access. And all of this end-to-end is very well audited so that we can go back later, and if we have an issue, and look at, you know, who had access when and exactly what were they doing.
Just a couple more points that I do want to bring up here.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, this is what we call like admin access to data, or ATCD is what we call it internally. So we take it so seriously that we want to make sure very few people at any point of time, first of all, can even request access to customer data. And even among them, there's like very extremely rare circumstances that they're actually accessing customer data. Right. So if you think about it, there has to be, you know, three or four people involved at any point of time, including the systems, for anybody to be accessing the data. The password itself that they get, these accounts, you know, when they request for access, the password itself is a high entropy password. It's like 26 character, crazy one-time use password that they can use to log into a particular server. They can't even move laterally. They can move only to that particular server that they gave permission for. And then you know, they can troubleshoot for that fixed period of time. If they want access to another server, they need to go back and do it all over again. Or if they want access for a longer period of time, they need to go back and do it all over again. So it is that controlled. And all of this, again, as Jeff mentioned, it's all audited. And at the, you know, at the end of the day, all of these audits go into an audit log. You know, our executives take a look at it every month to make to see how many people are accessing what kind of data, where, whether they did it with a reason or not, and things of that sort. So it's extremely rare. Like we believe, it's extremely rare that actually Microsoft admins do need access to customer data. You know, servers that actually live on customer data. Further, even when they are working on these servers, even when they're you know, doing some kind of troubleshooting or what have you, there are very, very limited processes that get run. We use Windows App Locker to make sure that there are whitelisted set of processes that they can run. And beyond that, they cannot run it. For example, they can't just open a browser and download some malware and run it on these computers, right? There are very limited things that they can do in these servers. Thanks.
So we talked about this piece, I think.
Yeah.
So what about the actual data itself? So at the end of the day, despite all of these environment protections, your data is sitting in a database or on a hard drive, on a disk, right? And we protect data a couple of ways. So first of all is logical isolation. The Office 365 services are built from the ground up, and I again point to that SDL process. So for every aspect of the application, we support storing data belonging to multiple customers on the same physical hardware, but in a way that enforces logical isolation. So each application enforces the notion that, you know, one customer's data never intermingles with another. And this is also prevented using the Office 365 authentication model. So when you log in, you go through our Active Directory, every customer, every tenant is in its own organizational unit. So you authenticate through your own section of the system.
Yeah, it's this org ID parameter is the fundamental parameter that kind of, you know, precedes all of the customer data that you put in the environment and everything else. So it's, since it's unique, it's all, you know, it's separated based on the organizational unit that you're in the Azure Active Directory that all of this you know, lives on.
And the other way we protect data is encryption. So I talked a little bit about encryption in transit. I'm actually going to come back to it now. And there's a couple things going on here. So first of all, if you make a client-to-server connection to Office 365, if you're dealing with downloading or uploading data to and from the cloud, those connections are protected by SSL, so those connections are encrypted. But we also look at data that's flowing kind of within and in between the Office 365 services. So for example, data center to data center connections in Office 365, and this would be for reasons like disaster recovery. We want to replicate data from, you know, one data center in the US to another one for disaster recovery purposes. Well, so those connections already take place not over the public internet, those are over private networking, but we're also adding encryption to those connections just as an additional level of security. When it comes to data at rest, it's a similar story. So we use BitLocker, so BitLocker drive encryption, to protect data at rest, to protect against things like drive loss or drive theft. And this is in place for email, messaging content, things like that. Yep. And then in SharePoint, for SharePoint sites or for OneDrive for Business, we have something else going on, which is, well, first of all, we're also applying BitLocker across that environment. And the other thing we're doing is we're putting together this new encrypted shredded store.
Before we get there, I do want to land a couple of points
here.
Please. Is that for all of your, you know, today, all of your messaging content, whether it's email, you know, logs about emails, transaction files, and things of that sort, they're all BitLockered in our servers in the Office 365 data center, right? This includes IM conversations. All of your IM conversations that are archived are BitLockered as well. What does this protect against? I mean, this protects against that one scenario where there's a rogue admin that may somehow get, you know, beyond all of this role separation and everything else, find out what you know, customer data is on what server and steal that data and walk away. So that is protected. And the second thing it also protects against is, you know, every once in a while it's hardware that there may be a need to recycle the hardware, send it back to the manufacturer or what have you. Even though we take all kinds of precautions, we do degaussing and things of that sort to wipe out, you know, if we do need to recycle drives, just in case there is this, you know, very, very small possibility that there may be some data on that, it's encrypted using BitLocker. We're also adding BitLocker for all of the SharePoint content as well by the end of the year. I know it's a popular topic. So that's what, you know, I do want to make sure, you know, I land this point that encryption itself is just but one technique among all of the defense in depth layers that we have to protect your data. However, it protects these kinds of rare scenarios that things may happen. Now, we also, this morning, we landed another important point which Jeff is going to talk about. He's been working on and he's very passionate about it. I think we should spend a little bit of time on it.
Yeah. So we're, in addition to BitLocker, so this is on top of BitLocker, we're also rolling out this new encrypted shredded storage system, and this is for SharePoint and also OneDrive for Business. And the way that this works is, so in the past, when you uploaded a document to SharePoint or to OneDrive for Business, this document would get split up into chunks and then stored in a database. And if it's a small document, it could be one chunk. If it's a big document, it could be 20, and then we'll add more pieces over time as you make changes. And it used to be that we would just write this to a database. If you're familiar with SharePoint, this was what we called a content DB. So what we're doing with this new encrypted store is, instead, when we get this document, when we split the document into chunks, we're encrypting each of those chunks with its own unique key. And for the rest of this slide, when I say encrypt, I mean AES 256 or higher. And then instead of putting those pieces, those encrypted pieces, in a database, we're actually going and getting a bunch of storage containers. So these safes represent storage containers in Windows Azure. And each of those storage containers has a unique key that we use to unlock it, that we use to access it. And we keep those keys in a key store in the Office 365 service. So when you upload a document using our new encrypted shredded store, we're chopping that document into pieces. We're encrypting each of those pieces with its own unique key. And then we're spreading those pieces across these storage containers. We then keep going. We take those keys that we have over there on the left and encrypt them a second time with a master key that we again get from the key store. So we're left with a set of encrypted keys. So key and then encrypted a second time. And at the end of the day, what we put back in that database in our service, instead of the entire contents of the document, is you have a bunch of metadata. You have a bunch of pointers to, you know, where your document lives in these encrypted chunks out in Azure, and then you just have a bunch of encrypted keys. So you end up with a very, very small database and a bunch of very large, very flexible, very scalable storage. So this is really great from like a storage and scalability perspective. But what exactly does this do for security, right? Why do we like this so much? Well, let me run through an example. So let's say somebody, and this could be an outsider or a malicious admin or anybody. Let's say somebody got access to this database. It used to be that this is the database that would hold all document content. Well, now all they have is they have metadata and they have a bunch of keys that they can't actually use because those are encrypted by a second key that they don't have. And if someone were to actually get access to the content in Azure, let's say Tom Cruise comes down from the ceiling here and starts taking drives. Well, first of all, they don't actually have the keys to open these safes. But even if they did, let's say they got into one of these Azure containers, well, they're looking at a bunch of encrypted shreds, but they don't know what's what. They don't know where your document is. They don't know how to put the documents back together. They have no map, and they definitely don't have each of the keys to uniquely decrypt each of these pieces. And finally, let's say that somebody managed to somehow get at the key store. Well, even then, they have a bunch of keys, but they don't know where they go. The analogy I like is you walk into a bank vault, and the bank vault has a million safety deposit boxes, and you have a ring of keys with a million keys on it, but they're all unlabeled. That's essentially what you've got if you have the key store. And to make that more difficult, we take each of those keys for those Azure containers, and we roll them at least daily. So they live for a very short period of time.
Go back a little bit.
Sure.
When Jeff talks about it, this absolutely excites me. I mean, think about it. Each of those storage containers are separate machines, right? Separate boxes. They're separated there. And then each of the content is actually shredded. I mean, each of your files are shredded, and they're distributed across. And the keys are separate. The fact that these are physically separate storages or key stores or storage containers, and the fact that the keys are separated across, it's very hard for somebody malicious to actually gain access to these things. And you have to have very unfettered access to the systems to actually be able to do anything malicious at all.
Yeah, these services are physically separate, they're logically separate, and they also even have separate administrators. So you don't even have the same team of people who work on both.
Yeah. So. And one other important point that I do want to land, but you might ask, okay, when do we get this, right? We're actually starting to roll out in July. We announced it this morning. That was one of the important announcements this morning. We're going to start rolling this out in Office 365 in July. And who gets it? This you might ask. This everybody gets it. All tenants in Office 365. You're a small business, or a large enterprise. Everybody gets to take advantage of this level of security. Okay. So I do want to land one more thing here, and then I'll hand it over to Jeff. So all of the things that we talked about in defense in depth, whether it was network security, protecting the hosts, lockbox procedures that we have to avoid malicious access, encryption, all of these, every one of these are preventative measures. We're trying to make sure some bad actors are not able to get into your data, the customer data. That's what it's all about. It's all about preventing it, right? So a few years ago, we went through a mind shift where we, our security teams and, they went through a mind shift where they figured out that you can never 100%, you can never be 100% sure you can be like preventative, right? We always have to assume that there may be something, something that we may have left out. There may be a small hole here or a small risk there that we need to be prepared against. So we went through this mind shift and we started making investments into this strategy called assume breach. So till then we had prevent breach, and we started making investments into assume breach, and now we're almost making 50% of our investments in security in assume breach as well as prevent breach. And now what is assume breach? Assume breach is assuming that, okay, let's say that is somebody is able to get in. Now, how do we identify who got in? How do we read the symptoms? How do we know that somebody got in? What about advanced persistent threats and things of that sort? How do we make sure somebody's not in there just waiting for the right moment to steal your data? Things of that sort, right? So this is what we call the assume breach strategy, and there are several things that we do under this strategy, and Jeff will talk more about it now.
Yeah, so one of the things, I mean, we have a bunch of protections in place, like I just kind of went through, but we can never just assume it's enough, right? There might be something we missed, there might be something that we have that's not working, there might be some new tactic that showed up out there in the wild that we need to protect against. And so what we really do is we believe in the value of what we call red team testing. So we have a team of engineers within Office 365 whose full-time job is to look at the Office 365 service kind of piece by piece, assess these services, and try to break in. And they go piece by piece across the service and try to actually find vulnerabilities and exercise them. And they use real-world tools and techniques, so they use things that we've seen over the past year or that are becoming trends. They'll try new things. They'll try to push our boundaries, and they'll also do things like kind of dig in deep and do assessments. Like, let's give you a vulnerability and a risk assessment of the environment. And one thing that these guys always do, that the red team always does as part of their exercise, as part of their testing, is in addition to whatever vulnerabilities or reports that they produce, they'll also always fire an incident. So we always get to see a real security incident, and then the blue teams, and in the case of SharePoint, I'm one of the blue team members, gets to jump in and exercise their detection and response process. So in other words, we get to flex that muscle of actually working a security incident on a regular basis so that we know that we'll always be ready in the case of a real one. And I think what I...
Whoops. So,
yeah, we have time.
I think what I want to do is...
Yeah. Yeah, before we get the so the red team, basically it's a bunch of white hat hackers, right? That they're paid, they're incented to, and they're gold on how many times they're able to break in, mm-hmm. like how many times and in what new ways they're able to break in. That is their job, right? I mean, that's all they do, and we believe that's one of the best ways to actually make sort of harden our service and to anticipate threats, even when there are external threats. Let's say Syrian Electronic Army broke into New York Times website. So they immediately get to work and they simulate the same kind of attack to see if we are at all vulnerable and how do we protect our service against it. Now, I think Jeff will show you some techniques of some of the interesting things that we do in analyzing patterns and looking at who's able to break in and things of that sort. Go ahead.
Yeah, basically what I just want to give you guys an idea for is a quick day in the life of the blue team. So I just talked about detecting and responding to these red team exercises or to a real attack. But what sort of tools and techniques are we actually using? So how are we keeping our eye on what's actually going on in the Office 365 service, and how are we actually keeping the service secure? So what you're looking at here is one of the security dashboards that we use to actually protect the Office 365 service. And it'll be made up of a set of reports and alerts. And this will be something that somebody on my team, on the blue team in SharePoint, for example, looks at on a daily basis. And when I say making sense of what's going on, I say that for a reason, because the Office 365 environment is big, right? This is a large environment. In SharePoint Online alone, there are some 17,000 machines, if I count physical and virtual, and those machines are generating tons of events on a daily basis. We get, just in terms of process starts alone, we get an excess of 400,000 Windows process starts a day. And so we have to take a look at all of this data, at everything that's going on in the environment, and look for things that stand out, right, if we're going to actually effectively protect the environment. And the way we do this is we leverage big data. So basically, we're using the power of the cloud as a way to actually detect and analyze what's going on in the cloud. And so we are collecting events every day. We're collecting Windows security logs, application logs, IIS logs, network logs, and we're uploading them to this big data store called Cosmos. And this is well over, again, just from SharePoint, well over a terabyte of security logs every single day. And we take those logs and we scrub them free of any, you know, user or customer identifiable information, and then we structure them in a way that we can come back and query on them. And let me show you what that looks like. This big data store called Cosmos also lets us do some very powerful queries. And if you look at this, it probably looks a lot like SQL, and it's somewhat similar, except that one of these queries, to try to find interesting or suspicious patterns, will run massively in parallel across thousands of processors at the same time. So we can take these terabytes and terabytes of logs that we have every day and process them down to just like a couple megs of interesting data in just a couple minutes, in like 10 to 15 minutes. And so what are we actually looking for? Well, we look for a bunch of different things. First of all, we look for specific things that we know should never happen. We have a bunch of different kind of workflows and streams that run and process this data. Based on our knowledge of the environment, we look for specific events or interactions that should just never occur. But we also just look for unusual activities. So we use machine learning. For example, we use things like Markov chains to put together sequences of events that we see in the environment. And then we will score those events based on how likely they were to occur, considering previous events and the probability of specific things occurring. And we'll flag something just because it looks unusual. So let's say you're a database admin and you perform a series of tasks. And you didn't necessarily do anything wrong, but we've never seen a database admin, anybody else in your role, perform that series of tasks before. That's going to get scored very highly, and we're going to flag it, and it's going to get looked at by the blue team. It's going to get looked at by the security team. We don't know if it was bad, but we know that it was unusual. We've never seen it. And so these models are going to produce reports based on things like that. And we look at those in a couple ways. If it's really strange enough, if it gets a high enough score, or if it's an event that we should just never see, we'll immediately alert somebody, spin up an incident, and jump into action. The other thing we'll do is produce visualizations and reports. So one of the things in that dashboard that I showed you to begin with would be a chart like this, where we look at processes by user that have been run in the service today, basically. And this wouldn't be all processes, because we might drown in that kind of information, but this would be processes that are unusual or that we don't see very often. And we're going to produce representations of them that a security engineer can actually look at and understand quickly. You know, what roles did these run on? How often did these run on? Who ran them? The final thing we're going to do is we're also going to leverage our own admins to help us protect ourselves. So if you're one of these admins who's request access through Lockbox and gone on and done a series of activities, and one of those activities is something we don't see very often or that stands out to us for some reason based on one of these algorithms, you're going to see an email like this. And that's going to say, hey, I saw you run this process on the debug machine, and I never see this thing before. Was this you? And we're also going to notify security to take a look at this to make sure that that admin's not doing something malicious. But this way, if we have an account that's actually taken over or compromised or misused, if this service admin clicks no, it's going to immediately pull on the security team and spin up an incident. So these are just some of the tools that we use to help protect the service and to help basically do detections and respond to incidents.
Yeah, just in summary, I mean, these are some of the, I mean, we do, you know, a lot of preventative measures as well as, I mean, by the way, the analysis that Jeff showed, analyzing the patterns of, you know, what's going on in our servers is just one technique. Right, there are several other things that our teams do They're called, you know, there's also a team called the SLAM team that does all kinds of analysis on big data analysis on what's happening in the service. If there are any security threats, should be, you know, how should we protect them, et cetera. And then, of course, there are the red team and the blue team and the war game exercises and everything else. All of this is happening beyond the defense in depth that we have to protect your data, right? To protect the customer data. So so basically, you know, it's just the risk is really, really small that anything that may happen to your data in our Office 365 services is what we want to bring out. And if there is that small risk, we try to mitigate it even further by using Assume Breach and Prevent Breach and techniques and you know, all of these techniques. Further, every one of these things, I will talk about it a little bit more if time permits under compliance, or if there is a compliance session on Wednesday that you can attend, where we'll take a compliance pivot to this whole thing. This whole thing is independently verified by auditors, like whether it's you know, ISO 27001 or SSA 16, what's the other one? FedRAMP, right? These you know, these standards, we have control requirements for each of these standards that kind of summarizes all of these techniques that we use to protect your data, and then they're verified by independent auditors that come and check every year. We go through these independent audits, and if you're a customer, you can request some of these audit reports, and you can actually see like how we fared against all of these practices. Right. So that's about all we do at the service level to keep your data secure in our data centers. Next, equally important, right? I mean, we did talk about two dimensions here. One was the service level security. The next, equally important, is customer security controls. Now, you have, you know, if you've moved from on-prem environment, or if you're thinking about moving from a, you know, on-prem environment, one of the things that concerns customers is control. Okay, I give it to you. Now I'm, you know, now you're in control. Now whether I'm in control or not. So we have tried to build in a lot of security controls or compliance controls in the service, so you can manage your own tenant environment. And let's walk through some of these. I don't have every one of them here, but I'll call out a few examples. Right? Okay. First of all, you know, information protection using rights management services. You know, how many of you have used you know, on-prem Active Directory based rights management service? And if you experience the I saw one or two show of hands, if you're implementing on-prem AD RMS, you need to have multiple servers, you need to do to take care of redundancy, you need load balances, you need a bunch of stuff to do, not to mention all of the maintenance and operations and everything else that go into it, right? To enable it in Office 365 for your entire organization takes under 5 clicks. Right, less than 30 seconds. You can go into the admin portal, enable RMS for your entire organization. And we call this the Azure Rights Management Services. And we even talked about it at our keynote this morning. So what does RMS do, Rights Management Service do? You may already be familiar with it, but it protects your data at the at the file level, right? At the file level. And we use 128-bit AES encryption. We protect your file at the file level, whether it's on your PC, or when it's in transit, or when it's in our data centers. The moment anybody tries to open a file, whether it's an email or one of the files in SharePoint folders or libraries, it gets encrypted with 128-bit encryption, right? It also protects whether it's on mobile devices or what have you. So there you have it. You have beyond all the encryption stuff that we do in the service, you also have encryption controls in your hands to protect your files. Now, we had, forever we've had RMS support for Office files and documents. Now we recently also released, a rights management service that can be applied to any file, whether it's an image file or a picture file or what have you. You can have what is called an RMS app on your desktop. You can just use the same policies that you have in your Office 365 environment to protect music files, picture files, PDF files, text files, whatever, right? And you can protect it using Rights Management Service. Next, going beyond RMS, we released in the last 6 months or so, we've released several encryption features in Office 365. The first one is S/MIME. S/MIME is an older technology. It's got quite a lot of staying power. It's been around for a couple of decades, I think. So very popular among government agencies, legal organizations, et cetera, that use some on-prem infrastructure, key infrastructure to actually encrypt data, right? So S/MIME, we released it with Office 365. Now you can use S/MIME protect your emails within your organization when you're sending encrypted emails to each other. Second thing is Office 365 message encryption. Building on RMS technology, we have this Office 365 message encryption with which you can send encrypted emails to anybody, whether they're within your organization or outside. All you need, all the recipient, all they need to open an encrypted email is, of course, they need to be who they are, they need to be a valid recipient. And the second thing is they need a Windows Live account or a Microsoft Live account. That's all they need, pretty low bar. You can use message encryption. You may be familiar with hosted encryption, and this is a form of hosted encryption now in Office 365. Third, we have transport layer security that you can use. We call this forced or opportunistic TLS. Your admin can say, I'm going to force all my users to encrypt their emails in transport to anybody they send it to. Or you can use opportunistic TLS where selectively some emails are encrypted when they're traveling over the wire. So there are these techniques that that you can use to further protect your data in your organization when you're collaborating and when you're using Office 365. Now, I don't want to spend too much time on this. We also have anti-spam and antivirus protections in Office 365 that comes with the service, so you don't have to go through implementing other vendors' solutions and maintaining them and all of the pain that comes with it. But you have anti-spam and antivirus capabilities as well. The other important part is identity management. Now, why is identity management important to security? Obviously, we talked about all protecting your data in Office 365 and everything else. How do we protect the access itself, right? So we have various identity management options that you have. Basically, you can use cloud identities where you just use your entire organization uses cloud identities in Office 365. You don't go through you don't have any Active Directory on your on premises or what have you. So it's very popular among smaller organizations. Then you can also have your on prem Active Directory work with Office 365 so basically you can use either directory synchronization and password synchronization where you synchronize your on-premises passwords to Office 365, so it's you don't have to a user doesn't have to remember two passwords, right? Even this password, when we sync it from on-prem to Office 365, it's one-way hashed, so it's not easily hackable, and it's further hashed again. It's like we hash it, like we encrypt it twice to make sure it's secure in Office 365. And the third thing, the most popular option that most of the larger customers use is federation, obviously. We can, you can federate with Office 365 to use secure SAML tokens. Here we have several options, whether you can, continue to use Active Directory on premises to federate with Office 365, or you can use several third-party vendors, right? We've been working with, 8 to 10 vendors. Identity vendors like Novell, IBM, Ping, et cetera, to enable federation between them and Office 365 so you can have secure federation, right? And the other thing that we also released recently is two-factor authentication, right? Multi-factor authentication in Office 365. Before this, you could use RSA Security ID or something like that with your on-prem infrastructure to use two-factor authentication. Now we acquired a company called PhoneFactor and we integrated it into Office 365. Now you have multi-factor authentication in Office 365. Again, with a click of a few buttons in your admin portal, you can enable multi-factor authentication for all of the users in your organization. There are various options to receive the second factor. You know, you can use, we can use push notification, a one-time passcode that goes to your app on the phone, or you can use, you know, we can use an out-of-band call. Basically, you get a call for the second factor, you press a button, and then you get authenticated. Or third, you know, the traditional way, which is, you know, text-based. You get an SMS, and then you use that that PIN to actually log into Office 365. Tomorrow, my colleague Paul Andrew is doing a session on identity management. You can actually attend that, and he's going to demo multi-factor authentication in Office 365. One more thing I want to add here is, you know, you have multi-factor authentication not only for web applications, but also for Office apps. We use something called App Password, where, you know, even for Office applications, you can use a second factor, right? With Office Pro Plus, when you have to log into the service and stuff, you can use MFA. Great. I do want to spend a little bit of time on, about 10 minutes on compliance a little bit, and maybe a little bit on privacy. But I will refer you to the session on Wednesday where we'll take a compliance pivot to this whole discussion, right? First of all, what does compliance mean, right? What standards do we meet? And these are some of the things that I'll touch upon very briefly in this session. Again, even in compliance, we look at two dimensions, built-in capabilities, the service level capabilities that we have, all of the regulatory compliance, whether it's ISO, you know, SSA 16, FISMA, FedRAMP, HIPAA, et cetera, all of the things that we do in the service to make sure we enable you to be compliant with some of these regulations and standards. And we also give you, controls for compliance, like e-discovery, data loss prevention, et cetera, so you can apply organizational policies and be compliant, you know, have your users be compliant with those policies. Okay, what issues does compliance address? Obviously, independent verification. Now, it's not us saying that we're great. Look, you know, we keep your data secure, and keep your data, you know, make sure your privacy is maintained, et cetera. But we're also verified by independent auditors, as I mentioned, every year, right? And we'll talk about more about audits in my Wednesday session. Secondly, regulatory compliance. If you're in a highly regulated industry, whether it's financial services or pharmaceuticals or what have you, you have a number of regulations that you have to adhere to. And this also, you know, compliance also adheres to, you know, helps you adhere to those regulations. Lastly, peace of mind. I mean, you know that you're compliant, your risk is reduced, and if there is a certain level of risk, you know what they are and you're consciously opting into it. So a little bit about standards and certifications that we meet. It's a chart. You have it in the deck. You can have a look at it. You can also visit the Trust Center where we have a list of compliance standards that we have. Okay, a little bit about how we meet these compliance standards. See, a lot of the time, the way the compliance gets addressed or compliance gets talked about is it's a checklist. It's like, okay, you know, do you have ISO? Do you have FISMA? Do you have this? Do you have that? Right? But it's also important that, you know, to see how we actually meet these compliance standards. Like, we have all of these capabilities in the product, and we've met a few, you know, some of the baseline controls, like you must have heard of NIST and you know, CSA and those kinds of standards, right? We've built a base level set of controls in Office 365 for various things like access control, account management, incident monitoring, et cetera. So based on these base level controls, we try to anticipate if there are new regulations or new standards that are out there and to see what is the delta. We already have a set of controls in our service. What else do we need to do to make sure we are compliant with the new regulations? So it's relatively easier for us to actually meet new regulations as we only need to work on the delta. We don't have a checklist approach. We maintain this master control list that we continue to work on, and that feeds back into the product to ensure the additional measures are taken in the product itself to meet a certain control requirement or what have you. So in turn, we're able to meet new regulations and standards, right? So we have over 950 controls today in Office 365, right? So it's if there is a regulation out there, it's more likely that we meet it already. If not, we need to just work on the delta to meet it. Just for perspective, ISO has about, I think, 170 controls or something like that. So we meet like far more stringent requirements than some of these standards that are out there. Okay, a little bit about compliance customer controls. I mentioned that we do go beyond the regulatory compliance and things of that sort to give you tools that you can do compliance in within your organization, right? This helps you to, identify, monitor, and protect any sensitive data that may leave your organization or that may be that may get shared in your organization as a part of collaboration, right? Data loss prevention. Like, you may know about data loss prevention that we have had forever in Exchange, right? We have that in Office 365 as well. Again, with a click of a few buttons in your admin portal, you can enable, data loss prevention. You can have policies like, any sensitive data that's, whether it's a credit card information, social security information, things like that, don't leave your organization. Or we have additional controls like you can actually set, override policy. So users know, if I do need to send this sensitive information, I understand the risk, and I do override it, and that these actions are audited, right? These kinds of controls are there in DLP. Again, this morning, we also announced that we are getting DLP also into SharePoint, right? Not just Exchange. So later this year, we're gonna have data loss prevention capabilities for your SharePoint documents as well. Further, you can also mix DLP with other techniques like RMS and Office 365 message encryption, where you can say, there are certain document types that I do want to my users to be able to share, but when they share, it's encrypted, right? You, as an admin, you can enforce such policies. DLP document fingerprinting. This is one of the new capabilities that we announced a couple of months ago. Basically, what this is this goes beyond just text, search, and text-based analysis of your of the emails you're sending or what have you, right? Now, take for example, pharmaceutical industries where they may have sensitive formula that they don't want to leave the organization. What you can do is you can create a fingerprint of that document that contains those what they call formularies, right? So you can actually do a fingerprint of that document. Anything that looks like that document gets, screened for, data loss prevention, right? You can apply, DLP policies like, don't send it or send it with some kind of an override policy and the actions being audited, right? So there are these kinds of capabilities, and you can use this document level, DLP fingerprinting for any document, right? Whether it's a sensitive formula or a financial document or what have you. So email archiving and retention, again, won't spend too much time on it, but we do have in-place archiving. It's all built into Office 365. You can have in-place archiving. You can have legal hold. You can take certain users and say, I want some kind of litigation hold in case of there is a court case or something happening. You can actually put a legal hold on it, and you can do easy search on these kinds of documents, whether it's user-based search or content-based search. Using e-discovery in Office 365. You don't need extensive, third-party solutions to implement these kinds of solutions in your organization. With that, I do want to spend a couple of minutes on privacy. Privacy is an important topic whenever, because of all of the things that have happened in the last year. Our principle is it's your data. You own it, and we're just managing your service for you. So we don't do any advertising. We don't scan your emails or documents or any of that sort to do any advertising. We are transparent about what we do with your data, like who has access to your data. You can go to the Trust Center and learn all about where your data is, what continent, in, you know, your data resides in, and who has access to your data, what sort of roles have access to your data, whether, you know, admins, what type of access do they have to what kind of data, subcontractors, you know, support personnel, right? All of that, you can actually read it in the Trust Center and see for yourself who has access, right? And you also have extensive privacy controls across the product, right? Whether it's you're using SharePoint, Exchange, or Link, you have various privacy policies that you can set to make sure your data is not out there to be seen by everybody. Even in newer products like Oslo that we recently released, we have privacy settings where you can choose to say, no, I don't want to share. I don't want you to do any machine learning or analysis on my data, right? You can set those kinds of things. So we do think about privacy right from design. So I just want to cap it off with again calling out the Trust Center, so you can go learn all about it. There are blogs about how we deal with the issues like government snooping, NSA type of issues. We deal with all that in the Trust Center. You can go read blogs by our chief legal counsel, where we talk about how many requests that we receive, law enforcement requests, and how, what is the process, like how we deal with it, et cetera, right? So that's it. We have about 15 minutes. I do want to leave some room for questions. And is there anything, Yeah.
So you mentioned something about retention of the data. So if there is a court case and it requires for us to erase all the data from wherever it is, are there procedures or measures in place to provide the evidence that it's completely deleted from any backup, nowhere whatsoever?
Okay. So one of the things that we say you can take your data. There are two aspects to it, right? If you ever leave Office 365, you can take the data with you and delete it forever. Or you can actually systematically go ahead and delete the data in Office 365 so there are no remnants of that data. I think you're asking about the latter.
My question is more along the replication of the data, right? Understanding is replicated on different servers, different regions, or even different continents, maybe.
Yes, we have. Actually, we do provide scripts and in the process to actually, if you want to completely delete your data from Office 365, you can do so. And once you have deleted your data, we keep it, we ensure that it's completely deleted. We guarantee that it will be completely deleted in 180 days.
That's the time limit. That's good enough. I think that's what I wanted to know. Second question is about the data for international companies which has offices in Europe or Asian countries and American countries, right? So is there any plan that Microsoft has to set the boundaries of data? Like for European users, data could stay within
So there are, obviously, like when we say data, there are different types of data, right? There's customer content, which is basically your emails or documents or the body of the documents, mm-hmm. right? That customer content, we actually guarantee that for European customers, mm-hmm. It stays in the boundaries of Europe.
Yeah, that's right? that content always stays within region, basically.
US, is that currently available?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can actually go, I keep pointing you to the Trust Center. There is a document called Data Maps on the Trust Center. I can probably show this to you here. There's a document called Data Maps where we show for various different regions where the data resides. Go back here.
The reason I ask, because my understanding from discussion with one of the Microsoft personnel is that there was no possibility to separate the data if it's under one tenant.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. So there are a couple of things here. It's if you at the time of creation of your tenant, mm-hmm. whatever region you're in, that's where your data is kept. For example, if you're a US based customer and you create a tenant here, your data is kept in the United States.
But then it comes down to the point, let's say you have one email domain in Office 365. Can you split in two separate tenants to have that boundary? Is that technically possible, or is that
today? No. Today you need to, you know, it all resides in one region.
So now we are talking. So is there a plan to come up with that type of solution in near future?
No, nothing I can comment on.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
I think those guys are for us.
Yes.
Quick question for certifications. Do you guys know any expectation on Office 365 FedRAMP certification, especially for the government community cloud?
Yeah, great question. I'll point you to my session on Wednesday so we can deal with it there. I'll have a colleague of mine who's actually working on that certification that will talk to you about it. But I can tell you at a high level, I can tell you that's later this year is when we are completing that. We do have a level of, we do meet the FedRAMP requirements.
Right.
The certification itself is later this year.
The paperwork.
Yes.
All right. I'll grab you at that session on Wednesday.
Yes.
Cool. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Quick question about information, about IRM protected SharePoint libraries.
Yes.
Is there any kind of ability or capability that you guys plan on releasing that allows you to share documents outside of, with people who are not on Office 365? Currently, it seems only work if you're an Office 365 customer. It only works for Office documents as well. So, kind of looking for seamless encryption of documents using like IRM for documents you're sharing with external. Maybe they're using Windows Live accounts.
Yeah. So there is a way to do it. That is, although I do want to say it's in the early stages of where we are going with rights management services,
yeah.
With Office in integration with Office 365. Now there is a way to send an encrypted rights managed encrypted document to an outside user and have them sign up for an RMS account using Windows or Microsoft account. Which is live.com or outlook.com, and actually consume rights managed document, consumption only, but not actually production of.
Okay, so today the
I can point you.
Today it's the app is what.
Yes, if you come see me, I can point you to the article on it, technical article. You can actually do it today.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Is the shredded storage feature that's rolling out, is that something that the user has to opt into, or is that just the default?
No, it's default. It's a service level capability that every tenant, user will get.
And when that lights up, that'll start applying to new documents. If you upload something after that lights up, they'll start getting put in this shredded storage. But then we'll also move, if you have existing content in OneDrive or SharePoint, we'll also move that in there over time.
And will the tenant administrator know when that flip happens? Is there some visual way to know when that
data is encrypted?
That I'm not sure about yet.
No, it'll probably be transparent to the users and the administrators because it'll all get encrypted in the background. But we will, like, our plan is to roll out encryption at rest for everything, right? So everything. So when we say we're done, your documents will all be encrypted.
Okay. So we won't know when we're done, but we just know.
Yeah, we haven't talked about when we'll be done yet.
Okay.
Because it'll take several months to roll out across all the server farms.
Okay.
On that question, is there a plan to put it in on-premise SharePoint?
No. I mean, the entire thing is basically built on the scalability of Azure, so the cloud is pretty key to that whole capability.
I have two small questions.
Yes.
One thing, I think in the user access, you mentioned the device and the location-based access control. I guess device is your workplace join. What about location-based access control in there? Can you explain
location? So basically, when you say location, you mean if the users are outside your corporate environment, you don't want them to be able to log into the service. Is that?
Yeah, sort of like that. I just want to know a little bit. Do you have any?
Yeah, there is a possibility. I mean, using your You know, if you're a if you have federation with Office 365, using your ADFS, you can actually you know, lock down. You can have access control policies, and you can actually lock down so that you can users can only access Office 365 from within your corporate environment based on IP addresses.
Oh, yes. Okay, got it. Yeah. So another one is two-factor authentication, right? So we know before in form factor, you can only do the two-factor authentication for the browser-based application.
Right.
And you said for Office application, which is a rich application, basically inside, like say Microsoft Word, if I in there access the document
you
in
can.
Office 365, that's what the two-factor authentication as well.
Yes.
But only outbound.
Pardon me?
Only outbound call.
No, no, no. You do have something called an app password that you actually go. It's a little bit complex. You have to go to the website and generate an app password, and then come back and use that app password to use it.
So you mean that password? So I literally enter inside the Microsoft Word.
Yes. Yes. There'll be a dialog box that'll open where you enter your app password. There is a blog where we talk about how you actually do it with screenshots.
After the session.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi. Quick question on certification.
Yes.
Are you working on NERCSIP certification anytime soon?
What is it?
North American Electrical Reliability Critical Infrastructure Protection for utilities.
I don't think so. No, I don't know. Maybe it's in our radar, but that is something I'd have to check and get back to you.
Okay. I'll come to your Wednesday session. Thanks.
Hi, I have a question related to Outlook.
Mm-hmm.
So my organization is trying to move to Exchange Online, and the security team saw one kind of showstopper. So Outlook creates the cache file, the OST file. And so basically, in order to use Exchange Online, we have to enable Outlook anywhere. And that means if I go to a friend of mine and open Outlook on his computer, it's going to cache the entire email. And we have a highly regulated environment, and this sounds unacceptable to the security team. So what is there a way to do certificate-based plus Active Directory authentication so someone can access it only on a company asset and prevent it from accessing from home computers?
Well, you can use, just last week I got this question from another customer, maybe it was you. You can use access control policies to actually prevent anybody accessing Office 365 from outside your corporate environment.
Right? Yes, I know that. But
yeah, what you're asking is use Outlook only when you're within your corporate environment and not when you're outside?
No, actually on corporate asset, on a laptop issued by the company, but not on my home computer. So this is...
Yeah, I don't believe that's possible today.
Okay, so it can be certificate-based, which has a certificate on the laptop, and no.
Yeah, no, I don't believe that's possible today.
Is there any plan to do that, or...?
Not that I'm aware of, but I would like to take that feedback for sure. But variant of that question I've heard is only allow OWA access or Outlook web access when you're outside the corporate environment, and whenever you're inside you can use
Outlook.
I mean based on the protocol that you access Exchange Online, use a certain a certain client or whatever.
So basically outside you can use OWA.
Yeah, inside
Outlook.
You can use Outlook.
Okay.
But
Thank you.
Earlier you mentioned about SharePoint, DLP coming to SharePoint. Are you guys also looking into Yammer, bringing in DLP capabilities to Yammer?
If you ask about intent, yes. I mean, we intend to bring all of these types of capabilities across all of the services, and some of them will light up sooner than others. Yes.
I think they said that, so if this was already covered earlier at TechEd, maybe go to that as the authoritative source, but I believe they said that those features, so the things that are showing up in the compliance center, are all also coming to on-premise, yeah.
Great. I think people are leaving, so yeah, I mean, you can come up here and talk to me. But okay. Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it. Hope this was helpful.
Thanks, guys.